Labors of Love. An informative look at modern-day evangelization, featuring the ministries and work of the Catholic Church in South Texas. Stay with us and learn of the Church's many services and benefits with your host, Margaret Alleria, Director of Evangelization and Catechesis for the Diocese of Corpus Christi, as she explores the Catholic faith with her many guests and their labors of love.
Thank you for joining us on Labors of Love. I'm your host, Margaret Alleria, and I'm here with my guest, Ron Alonso, who is the Diocesan Deputy and Corpus Christi Knights of Columbus Area Chapter President. How are you, Ron?
I'm fine, thank you.
I'm excited to have you here. One of the main reasons is that I'll get to know a little bit more about the Knights of Columbus myself. I do know that my father's a knight, but not much more than that. So I'm glad that you're here, and I'm sure the audience will appreciate getting to know you as well. Before we get started, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I am happily married to my wife, Margo Alonso, and we have two daughters. Oldest daughter is Allison Alonso, and my youngest daughter is Amanda. And we've lived here in Corpus Christi for quite some time, since about 19—I've lived here since 1982, and she's a lifelong resident of Corpus Christi.
Oh, wonderful. So am and, I. Mm-hmm. went to Miller High School.
And we're very active parishioners over at St. Patrick's Catholic Church. And that's also where I belong, at St. Patrick's Council 1202 in the Knights of Columbus.
Wonderful. Thanks for sharing. Tell me then how you got involved with the Knights of Columbus.
Actually, it was in 1990 when I was in college at Houston. I was, by the way, I'm also a funeral director. And so while in college, I was working at a funeral home there in Houston. And every morning I would see a gentleman that worked at the funeral home arrive at the funeral home early in the morning. He would stay in his car for a little while. Then he would finally exit his car, and he would walk in the building. And he did this several times, so I finally asked him what he was doing. It was curiosity. Why were you spending so much time in the car in the morning? And he made me aware that he would pray the rosary every morning to work, finish his rosary in the car, and then he'd walk in and start his shift. And I had noticed he had a lapel pin on his jacket, and I asked him what it signified. And he said, it's the Knights of Columbus. And every day from that point on, he asked me when I was going to join the Knights. So shortly thereafter, I joined while in Houston.
You know, I have so many interviews and so many guests where they get that invitation from someone else. And I guess this is a similar experience when he was not harassing you, but encouraging you to join a fraternity of brothers. But tell me a little bit more then about what the Knights of Columbus is.
Well, the Knights of Columbus was established in 1882 to provide a means by which Catholic men could support the Catholic Church, provide financial support to protect their families, and engage in works of charity to benefit the less fortunate. Actually, it was started by a Catholic priest, Michael J. McGivney, and today it's nearly 1.8 million members make up the largest Catholic lay organization in the world. Its insurance program has $74 billion of life insurance in force, and last year Knights donated more than $150 million and volunteered 68 million hours of their time to charity.
That's quite impressive. You also help these charities in forms of assisting children, helping those that are physically disabled. So then you have a particular ministry to help people in need.
We really do. In fact, here we just came back from a state convention. And at that state convention, we're very active in supporting the physically disabled by wheelchair. We have a wheelchair program where each diocese tries to provide as many wheelchairs for different areas of the world that are in need.
That's really amazing to hear. I'm sure that's going to touch the hearts of a lot of our audience. So then let's talk about the different programs that the Knights have. There's obviously a lot of love. There's a lot of volunteer work. There's a lot of monetary funds that are given to the church and to people in need. So I understand that there's a lot of family activities, community activities, youth activities. Can you run me through the various activities that the Knights participate in?
Certainly. In fact, many of the – I'll touch – just highlight on a few of those activities, such as the family activities. Most of the councils throughout the entire diocese and also throughout the entire state have different times during the year that we all pray together the rosary as a family. We also, in every during November of every year, all of the councils will celebrate a memorial mass for all of their deceased members throughout the entire state. Here locally, a lot of the things that we draw attention or get a lot of exposure from are like the the church activities, where we actually have an annual clergy appreciation banquet, which for years we have hosted over the years. And actually this past year, to kick off the Centennial Jubilee celebration, we were asked by the diocese to go ahead and join with the other ministries in the diocese. So it was actually a combined effort this last year. And we're going to continue with that. It was such a good response. We're going to continue with that again as years go on. But Toys for Tots, we have an annual free throw contest at all of the youth. We have council level, diocesan levels, and then we end up in March for a state free throw championship. And it's just so neat to see all these kids travel all the way up there. And you know them having gone through the council, through the diocesan levels, and make it up there and see these parents every year keep their kids going for that. But and the scholarships are very important, because we have various funds that we have that assist the youth in scholarships. Any child of a knight is allowed to go ahead and apply for these education scholarship funds that are out there. But we also go one step further in that we also have scholarships for the Catholic schools. And there's a certain amount that's allotted per diocese, and the bishop will decide which one, or the superintendent of the Catholic schools will decide which of those schools will receive those monies.
You know, sometimes we think that money isn't everything, and I completely understand that statement, but you're talking about giving funds to people who might not be able to send their child to a Catholic school, or funds that are helping different charities. And so in this case, money does make a big difference. And so I'm so glad to hear that you're mentioning that. Let me ask you did talk about some youth activities, community activities. You mentioned briefly Toys for Tots, and I actually have heard about that basketball tournament that you all have. So that's another thing that I know about the Knights, and I'm learning more as we go along. But I have also seen at many different parishes a memorial to the unborn, and I understand that that's attributed to the Knights. How, why is that continuing? Why did that get started, and why such a devotion? I mean, I understand the devotion, but what was the thinking behind that?
Well, a lot of the councils you'll see, and you have to understand, within our order, we have four different principles: charity, unity, fraternity, and patriotism. Many of those memorials that you see have been established by fourth degree assemblies or the patriotic part of our order principle. We do have one memorial that is for the entire diocese that actually resides, right, located right there on Saratoga and Castores. Actually going to be real close to where the new facility for the retired priest or infirm priest is going to be at. So there is a memorial there where we as an assembly pray the rosary once a month at that site.
And I have seen that. I didn't realize that it was attributed to the Knights of Columbus.
It certainly is, and we actually maintain the grounds there and make sure it's lit constantly.
So that's the monument to the unborn.
That is correct. And a lot of other councils, give you an example, I know that 6413 in Portland has one outside of their church. And I could go on and list many other ones, but every council tries to have a memorial outside of their or located on their church grounds for that.
So then you're talking about the first principle out of the four: charity, unity, fraternity, and patriotism, but the focus on the first principle, which is charity. And in that charity, you all wanted to establish a monument to the unborn children.
Certainly.
Who sometimes we feel have a lack of charity.
And I think what we have to remember is that unless you actually see memorials like that, pro-life or the unborn goes on without anyone knowing about it. So we want to draw attention to it, that we need to sanctify that life and make sure that give that child a chance.
So in one word, bring awareness.
That's correct.
To the community.
Very
and I think
so.
You all are doing a fabulous job with that because I know many people have noticed those monuments just as I have. Ron, we're going to take a quick break. Stay with us on Labors of Love.
This is Labors of Love.
It's time for Deer Creek Camp. The Office of Youth Ministry of the Diocese of Corpus Christi invites 7 to 16-year-olds to Deer Creek Camp, July 15th through the 20th. It'll be a week of archery, kayaking, canoeing, climbing, water slides, tool time for guys, and spa time for girls, a faith walk, ski obstacles, water towers, arts and crafts, fishing, and so much more. The camp is in the hill country along the banks of the Medina River. Individual time, cabin time, great food, holy mass, adoration, and reconciliation are offered throughout the week. The registration deadline is June 29th. For complete information, call Jaime Reyna at the Diocese Office of Youth Ministry, 882-6191. Summer's here, and the fun awaits at Deer Creek Camp, 882-6191.
Thank you for being with us on Labors of Love. I'm here with my guest, Ron Alonso, Diocesan Deputy and Corpus Christi Knights of Columbus Area Chapter President. Ron, we've talked about so many interesting things, and I know there's quite a few other things that I definitely want to touch on. But let's go ahead and go back to some of the activities that you all support. And we have church activities. I understand that there is seminarian support that you provide. Can you speak more about that, please?
Certainly. The seminarian support, one of the things that we do is that we strive to make sure that every seminarian in the diocese, as well as the state, is supported by, if not one, two councils. We actually have what's called an RSVP program that every council is allowed to go ahead and select or is asked to select the seminarian. And the diocese, I'm proud to say, we have every seminarian supported by one or two councils. They also not only provide some type of funding, a minimum of at least $500, if not more, per seminarian annually, but they stay in touch with them by sending cards to encourage them throughout their entire period of time of being a seminarian until they actually become a priest. So it's actually really nice to see the photos. The Chantry's office provides us an active list, and then we pass it and filter on down through the councils. So it's really neat to see that.
And our seminarians need all the support they can get. And speaking of seminarians, you also work with the priests, and you have what's called the Infirmed Priests Fund. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yes. In fact, one of the ways we support the infirm priests are by our license plates. With a KC license plate, we proudly proclaim that we are a knight, a Catholic, and that America is one nation under God. In addition, and most importantly, by purchasing a Knights of Columbus plate, we get an opportunity to take care of our infirm priests. It costs us $30, but out of those $30, $22 goes towards our infirm priest fund.
Well, that's a deal, I must say. And you did mention earlier, you spoke about the retirement home for our priests, the St. Yes. John Vianney Home mm-hmm. for priests. And it's really important that we take care of our priests constantly, not just one or two years of focusing on the priest, but ongoing, because our priests take care of us. They take care of us when we have children, when we get married, when we're sick, when we die, and we need to take care of them. So I'm glad to hear that. And the fact that most of the funds that are raised through these license plates go back to the Infirmed Priest Fund is also quite phenomenal. So thanks for sharing some more of the activities that you're a part of. Ron, let's go ahead and talk about what qualities the Knights look for in men who are considering joining the order.
Well, the Knights of Columbus are men that are 18 years of age and older who are committed to making their community a better place while supporting their church. Being a knight is more than camaraderie. It's being involved with your community. It is supporting your local Catholic church while enhancing your own faith. It is about protecting and enhancing your family life.
So in a nutshell, it's a well-rounded gentleman. They have to be 18 years or older, but
yes.
Who's committed to the faith and committed to, let's say, growth of the community and the church.
That's correct. And also one of the requirements that's very important is that they have to be practical Catholics, that is practicing in union with the Holy See. A lot of folks ask, what is a practical Catholic? A practical Catholic accepts the teaching authority of the Catholic Church on matters of faith and morals, aspires to live in accord with the precepts of the Catholic Church, and in good standing with the Catholic Church.
So let me ask you, and this is the religious education director coming out, do they need the sacraments of initiation? Are we looking for men who are baptized, have received the Eucharist, and have been confirmed?
Most definitely. In fact, we actually, it's interesting to see when we go through our installation, when individuals are approved to come into the order, we see some of the men that are seem to have a little bit more knowledgeable are converts, because they have just learned all the requirements of becoming Catholic and going through a sacrament. So it's so interesting to see that they're on fire.
You can see that passion. I would completely agree. There's one thing I love about RCIA, and that's that these adults have freely and willingly wanted to learn more about their faith and become a part of the Catholic Church. And they are very passionate and very on fire, so definitely agreed there. Now, let me ask you, as a knight, what are some of the things that you're most proud of?
These men called knights play an important role in our order and contribute to the well-being of the church and the community. As I look back over the 30-plus years of being a knight and Knights of Columbus, I look for words to explain why I give so much of my time to the order. Someone once asked me, what inspires you to keep going? Where do you get your strength from? Well, the reason is simple. I am passionate about a lot of things, my faith, my family, and my belief that being part of something that fills your heart and your mind with the joy of giving to others and the feeling that comes with making a difference. That's where I get my strength from, and that's what makes me stronger than the sacrifice that I've made throughout those years of being in the Knights of Columbus.
So we're speaking about a man who is strong in their faith, and you're personally speaking here, is committed to their family, and enjoys the feeling of helping others.
That's
well,
great.
You know, actually, let's look at this. You serve others out of charity and love, and with that comes the feeling of joy.
Certainly.
Okay. Let me ask you, I know that we see these men in all of this garb, and there's feathers here and there, and there's swords and colors, and red and black come to mind. Tell me about the garb of the Fourth Degree Knights.
Well, that again is the fourth principle of our order, patriotism. And what you see when you see the men with the funny hats and the feathers, that's called a chapeau.
I didn't say funny hat.
That's okay, but we hear that a lot. I actually hear that from the youth a lot. But it's called a chapeau. And a chapeau, depending on what position you hold within the fourth degree, may vary in colors. When you first enter the fourth degree, you'll have white feathers in your chapeau. You'll have a cape that will have red color to it. Then you can slowly progress up. When you receive a white cape, you're a faithful navigator, the leader of an assembly. Above or in that as well, you'll have commanders that have purple capes and purple feathers. And above that, you'll have a green feather and a green cape. He is a marshal. He will pretty much oversee all of the area of a certain diocese. Then you'll have above that a gold feather, and he is called a master, and he oversees 2 to 3 dioceses. And in turn, above that is the vice supreme master, that is a light or powder blue feathers and cape. So those are the different men. I can assure you they're very proud to be members of the fourth degree. And actually what we see in our order are those men that actually reach that position of being a fourth degree knight very seldom fall off from the order. They're very committed, and they're very proud to fall out when another brother knight has passed away. They will attend the rosary. They will stand honor guard beside the casket. They'll participate at Sherrill Park. They'll go to various different places and fall out. These men are the patriotic principle of our order and very proud of it.
Well, thank you so much for sharing. And you did mention that this was out of the four principles, the part where we're patriotic and patriotism comes mm-hmm. alive. We did speak about charity and a bit about fraternity, but let's go ahead and talk about unity. What is the unitive aspect of the Knights of Columbus?
It is the second principle of our order, and one of the things that we have found is that if we stay united towards a common cause or goal, whether it's pro-life, whether it's charity, where we raise as far as councils have a certain amount of charity goal that they receive, that they're to reach we all are committed. Say, for instance, when the bishop decides that his charity of choice this year is going to be the Catholic charities towards the disabilities department, we are united in making sure that we reach that goal. We have consecutively for 3 years reached the charity goal that he's asked and set for us, and we hope to make it a fourth year by the end of this fraternal year on June 30th. So, yeah, when we come together and we decide to do something, we are united.
You make things work. That's correct. Well, I'm so glad that you shared. I've learned quite a lot about the Knights of Columbus, and as I'm sure our audience has. If anyone would like more information about becoming a Knight of Columbus or would just want to inquire about what you all are about, where would you send them?
The easiest way for them to learn a lot about our order, it's very simple. You can either look up on our state website, which it's easy to remember, www.tkofc.org, or you can actually look at our Supreme website, which is just take the T off, www.kofc.org. That is the Supreme website. And it has a lot of information. It has information about how to find a council. We strive to have a council at every church in the Diocese of Corpus Christi. So,
well, God bless you in that goal, and thank you for joining us on Labors of Love.
Thank you.
This is Labors of Love, the ministries and evangelization of the Diocese of Corpus Christi. If you have questions or perhaps a comment about today's program, why not send us email? Address your email to labors@klux.org or by U.S. mail, 1200 Lantana, Corpus Christi, Texas, 78407. And now, with this week's Sacred Moment, here is Deacon Stephen Nolte.
One of the first things you probably did this morning was go into the bathroom, turn on the light, and turn on the water. You then cupped your hands and, taking water into them, brought it to your face and began washing away the dullness of sleep that remained from the night. You probably didn't think of where the water came from or even how it got to your faucet. You just know as long as you pay your water bill, the water keeps flowing. Water is one of the most essential things man needs to live. Without it, we die, and yet we seldom give much thought to it, unless something happens and we're told to boil it before using. We may know someone who lives in the country. If so, we know about well water. Anyone who has to rely on well water will tell you that it's not always the best water. After all, it is water that has to be pumped from deep under the ground. Sometimes the water tastes salty, or it has a lot of minerals in it, and it has to be treated with filters and chemicals before it can be used. Some well water has a pungent smell, like sulfur. Water has been at the heart of many battles and legal wars. In the Old West, men would shoot each other in fights over water rights. They needed to have water for their livestock and their crops. Before the use of fences on the open range, ranchers would protect their water supply with their life, because without water, their livelihood and their life would soon end. The need to have a ready source of water was no different in biblical times. Towns were built near or around the ancient wells. One such well was known as Jacob's Well. This was the well where Jacob first saw Rachel, the woman he loved so much that he served her father for 14 years for permission to marry her. Hundreds of years later, a woman of Samaria went to draw water from this very same well, near a town called Sychar. When she arrived at the well, a man was resting near it. He said to her, "Give me a drink." The Samaritan woman said to him, "How can you, a Jew, ask me, a Samaritan woman, for a drink?" Jesus answered and said to her, "If you knew the gift of God, and who is saying to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." We should ask ourselves what Jesus meant when he said living water. Well water rises to the surface of the hole in which the well is situated. It then stands there until it is drawn or pumped out. As it sits, it becomes stagnant. Living water is water that flows. It does not become stagnant or lifeless. Such water is the water by which we are baptized. It is water that is stirred into life by the Holy Spirit, even as he swept over the waters of creation in Genesis. The Samaritan, representing all sinners, represents us. When Jesus invites her to receive living water, he invites each and every one of us. May you be ever renewed by the living waters of baptism that washed over you and filled you with the Holy Spirit. And may your faith never become stagnant like well water. Rather, keep faith and always seek the movement of the Spirit in your life. Amen.
Thank you for joining us on Labors of Love. I'd like to thank my guest, Ron Alonso, Diocesan Deputy and Corpus Christi Knights of Columbus Area Chapter President. If you would like more information about the Knights of Columbus, please visit their website at kofc.org. Thanks again for joining us on Labors of Love.
You've been listening to Labors of Love with Margaret Alleria. Online MP3s of this program are available on the CCN server. Browse to podcasts.goccn.net. Scroll down and select the Labors of Love category. Be with us next week at this same time for another edition of Labors of Love. Labors of Love is a production of the Department of Evangelization, Diocese of Corpus Christi, and CCN, the Catholic Communications Network.